For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Welcome to another Baseball America Podcast. We're wrapping up our look at the farm systems of each and every one of all 30 organizations. We're almost done with these. We're here to the National League West, and today we are talking about the Colorado Rockies. But before we do that, we want to thank you for tuning in today's Baseball America Podcast. Our podcast is sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out Baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Perfect just in time for spring training. Visit Baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. That's Baseballism.com. That's BaseballISM.com. So, John, as we sit here looking at the Rocky system, we talked last about the Diamondback system, and that was a rough one. The Rockies, a little bit easier to talk about, a little bit more to talk about here.
There's so much more to talk about, JJ. I invited Kyle Glazer to come talk a little Rockies with us, too. So, I mean, we're going to talk a little National League West. We just did Diamondback's podcast, and that's less to talk about. The Rockies have more. You know,
the Rockies are a tough one to line up because there's a lot of credible guys.
There are, but you know, one of the things, we were up at MLB Network this week, JJ, and we were talking about our Top 100 show, which will air tonight. We're recording this Friday. We'll have this podcast up by the end of the day, Friday, 9 o'clock, Friday night, February 10th, is when our Top 100 show will be on MLB Network. Top 50 prospects that we go over there, and the 51 to 100 will be on the crawl.
And if you're listening to this after that, it'll also re-air multiple times. So if you go to MLB Network and search their schedule, you can find multiple other. I think Saturday at 4 is another one.
That's another one. We definitely heard Greg say that one. But, you know, one of the things that Greg Amsinger said in his script about the Rockies, one of their top prospects was that Brendan Rodgers was number one on the BA 500, and he was a consensus number one prospect in the 2015 draft, and the Rockies were glad he got to number three. That is true. But he's going to have to do a lot to be better than Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman, the top two guys drafted ahead of him. And that's kind of where I wanted to start, because Brendan Rodgers, we did have a lot of options. And they drafted Riley Pint, and they have Jeff Hoffman. I mean, they have a lot of guys stepped into our top 100. You'll see tonight. But Brendan Rodgers, I'm very curious to know how good you guys think he can be. Because for me, he's pretty exciting. And I do think the reason that he was the number one guy in 2015 is that if you believed in him over Bregman and over Swanson, it's because he had the best power of that trio. And I think so far, as good as Bregman's been, I still think that's true with Brendan Rodgers. Kyle, that's why I like him. I'm pretty excited about him.
I really like Brendan Rodgers. If you pick up the prospect handbook, you can see our individual top 50 rankings. I have him jacked up, mine. I mean, he's a guy that I think shortstops who can hit with legitimate power are so rare that when you can get one, that automatically puts you at such an advantage over 90% of Major League Baseball. And I think Brendan Rodgers can be a guy like that. It's going to be tough to tell, though, how legit the power is, because he hit 19 home runs this past year. It looks great. Then it's in Asheville, which is a great hitter's park. Next year, he's going to be in Lancaster in the Cal League, another great hitter's park. Yeah. So, you know,
just keep going up the ladder.
Right. So if he doesn't hit 25, 30 home runs, maybe you want to be a little concerned. But for me, this is a guy that has been an elite talent at every level. He's lived up to it when he's had to so far. I do have Dansby Swanson ranked ahead of him. I'm a huge fan of Alex Bregman, Ahmed Rosario. This isn't about them, you know, how good they may or may not be. I just really think that Brendan Rodgers can be and has all the equipment to be a franchise shortstop, not unlike what the Rockies have with Troy Tulowitzki. Now, I'm not saying he's the next Troy Tulowitzki. I'm just saying that type of franchise shortstop you can build around. I think he can be that.
I think he can be like a better version, JJ, of Trevor Story, who had this really good rookie year going on last year until he got hurt. Obviously, all kinds of power for Trevor Story. That wasn't a surprise. Neither were the strikeouts.
No.
But I think that Brendan Rodgers has a better, a more advanced hit tool and hitting ability, your favorite phrase, hit tool. I'm going to do all of your least favorite things today, Kyle, since Duke beat Carolina. So, it's my only way to get back at you. But he's a more advanced, more polished hitter, JJ, at a similar stage, is he not?
Yes, and I do think also it's also similar when you talk about him at shortstop. I think that on the flip side, the thing with Rodgers, if you also say versus Swanson and Bregman, and obviously Bregman's not going to play shortstop, but that's because when you talk about shortstops who can hit for power, the Astros already have one of those.
They have the new Troy Tulowitzki, right. The younger Troy Tulowitzki.
Right. You know, but you do look at, I do think with Brendan Rodgers, I think he can play shortstop at the big league level, but there's less certainty on that. And really that comes back to more than anything, because we're talking about a 20-year-old and we don't know yet what his body's going to look like at 24, 25.
Right.
Again, I think that it's very plausible, but that fits me like Trevor Story. Trevor Story is a shortstop, but at the same time, when Trevor Story was coming up, there were some questions. The hit tool is the big question, but the other one was, is he a shortstop or is he a second baseman long term? Maybe it ends up working out that at that point, you know, he ends up that they share, but they, you know, that Story moves to second because Rodgers will be younger. But no, I think the hit tool is definitely better than Story's. I think you're going to see more contact ability, and that's kind of what makes him. When you talk about a guy who could be a shortstop with plus hit tool, plus power, that is pretty special, and that's why he's jacked pretty high up on our top 100.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he needs to be. I mean, it's hard to find guys with 200 isolated slugging in low class A who are middle infielders. This guy hit, I know a lot of it, and the home run splits were pretty extreme at Asheville for him. I do think, A, most young players are better at home because you're not traveling. And traveling is hard.
First year, especially when you're 18, you're not used to it. There's no question.
But also, JJ, this is a guy who last year had a pretty underwhelming pro debut. I mean, Brendan Rodgers,
you're being kind.
Prospect, I am. For a top prospect, he went out of the Pioneer League, and you know his high school season ended in April in 2015, which, you know, Florida, clean it up, please, with your high school baseball. Let these guys play. They're already playing high school baseball games that count right now in Florida in February, and the season ends in April. I mean, like, clean it up. Come on, man. It's ridiculous that Florida's high school season ends so early and they restrict the number of games these kids play. But that's a whole other story.
But that's why I also try not to read too much into a guy's pro debut, their draft year, whether it's the college guys who are exhausted after a long season, the high school guys who have just finished up prom and graduation, high school playoffs, and now they've signed a bunch of money, and their mind is whirling, and they're in some cases flying to the other side of the country they've never been before.
Right, but the superstars don't let that faze them. They jump right in, and hey, you know, Chris Bryant went 0-for-5 with 5 strikeouts, I think, in his first game there. I think when 0-5, 3 strikeouts and 3 errors, something like that. His Arizona League first game stunk. His Northwest League first game stunk. But guess what? After that, he was like, hey, I'm Chris Bryant. I'm going to conquer this. And he conquered every level. And he finished that year dominating the Florida State League and then MVP of the Fall League. I mean, that's a superstar example. But that's what the superstar – you want to see the guys – it doesn't mean that you can't be a star and still be a good big leaguer with a bad debut. But the superstars very rarely have poor debuts. So it is an indicator.
I think some of that is also have to take into account college versus high school. There's an age component there. But I guess the way I view it is, I give a ton of credit to a guy who has a great debut. I'm not willing to kill a guy who doesn't.
I think that's very fair.
I think the thing that's also indicative with it, though, is that is such just something to watch for is that there also are body types. Brendan Rodgers is a body type. What happened with that is there was some injury issues. But a lot of that stemmed from he gained a little weight during
that
time.
That's what happened. He got done with high school season at the end of April and then basically did some workouts, but he knew he was going to go high in the draft, so he didn't bust it in that for a whole month. And then he went to the Pioneer League and was like, hey, wait a minute. This is A, not a complex league. B, this is a little bit, so it's a little bit more challenging. And B, he's playing every, wait a minute, we have another game today? Wait, another game tomorrow? And he played 37 games. He basically played half the system, wasn't in great season, wasn't in great shape. and had these nagging injuries.
So that's, again, the thing that's to me most indicative from that is it's just telling us, and it's just telling Brendan Rodgers, that he's going to have to stay on top of his body because he is someone.
That's right.
He is someone who, there are guys whose body types are such that they are going, their natural, everything about them is they're going to stay shortstop size no matter what they do.
Yeah.
Brendan Rodgers is a guy who has to work to stay on top of it with the agility,
yep,
with all those things to stay shortstop size.
But the best thing that he did was he played 110 games this year, and he was pretty consistent month to month, had a very steady first full pro season, and I think he's on pace to be an offensive middle infielder and athletic enough to play either second or shortstop. I think he's going to wind up being that guy where if he's a shortstop, you could probably find someone who's a better defender at shortstop. I do think he has the ability, the hands and the actions to be a very solid, reliable shortstop.
The Dodgers did pretty well with an offensive shortstop who,
no question.
I mean, let's be honest, Brendan Rodgers in low A, but scouts view him as much more of a shortstop than they ever did with Corey Seager.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. So then this is a system where I want to focus on the hitters because the hitters are easy for the Rockies because it's easier to hit in their organization. The other guys who ranked in their top 10 were Ramel Tapia, Tom Murphy, and Ryan McMahon. Ryan McMahon had a precipitous drop this year. He's number 9, still in their top 10. The Rockies still believe, because this was here's a guy a couple years ago I thought was one of the budding stars in the low minors. Athletic, profile at third base, profile tools. He looked like it was hit over power. The hitting ability, he struck out a lot in the low minors. But Kyle, he has not gained more control of the strike zone.
So
the more pitchers are throwing strikes, the more he's striking out. And you saw it in the Cal League in 2015.
I saw him in the Cal League and I saw him in high school at Modern Day.
He's
a guy I've actually seen for a while now. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn here and say, you know, I saw it coming because I thought he'd be better than he has been. But I think the thing with him was he was always a guy that I think a lot of people got so excited about the athleticism, they were willing to overlook some of the tools shortcomings. Mm-hmm. And for me, he's a guy that you had to project, I think, more than people gave him credit for. And to me, that at least I thought that was pretty clear in high school. Then we've seen it in pro ball where he's not a baseball player. He's a great athlete who is still really fine-tuning the baseball skills.
Yeah.
And the Rockies have pushed him, you know, fairly aggressively.
They have.
I mean, he's a double A.
He didn't conquer high A in 2015. He was good, but he wasn't. I mean, he did strike out a lot. You could have started him back there at his age. And Hartford was challenging because they didn't have a home field all year.
Right. So I think the combination of he was always a guy that, you know, maybe if everything clicked, and it still could. I'm not saying he's a bust, write him off. I think that people were overly high on him and maybe how polished he was because they just love the athleticism.
I think Southern California thing is a big aspect of it. I think you go to Modern Day and you play in that league. What's that league called?
Trinity League.
Trinity League?
Yeah.
I mean, you could make a case the Trinity League is the best high school conference for baseball in the country. I mean,
if it's not wanted, it's in the conversation for top 10 any year.
Right.
Year, yes.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So I think the fact that even if he was a football guy playing baseball, that you think in that conference he's seen the caliber of pitching you're going to see in pro ball. Not every time, but most of those guys who are your aces in the Trinity League are high-level college. Exactly.
No, so, there's no question. But again, it comes back to, you know, it's facing in high school, no matter how good your high school, you're facing a pro-caliber pitcher maybe once every couple of starts. In the pros, you're facing one every single start.
It's a big difference. I do think his polish got a little overestimated because of the modern day factor and their schedule. JJ, there's no organization that loves drafting high school third basemen like the Colorado Rockies. They used to be known for drafting quarterbacks, and they'll still probably do that. Ryan McMahon,
right, especially from Southern California, Nolan Arenado, Southern California guy, Tyler Nevin, Southern California guy.
But they went
Ryan
South Florida.
Southern California guy.
They went South Florida this year with Colton Welker, who was the force behind Miami's Douglas High School winning being our number one team in the high school rankings. I asked Bill Schmidt about this during draft report cards this year. It's like, why do you guys keep trading to high school third base? He's like, we like high school third baseman. Nolan Arenado worked out pretty good. We like McMahon. We like Welker. We like Nevin. And he's like, they had Kevin Padlow.
Marietta
they traded him. So they like those guys. They have a pretty decent track record with these guys. I wonder if there's one of these three guys that you like best, McMahon, Welker, Nevin.
Nevin was strange. I mean, you want to talk about if anyone got the report for their 2016 season back and it said to be incomplete.
Yes, exactly.
Nevin is the incomplete because
one at bat.
Yeah.
One at bat.
He did bat 1,000. Yeah. But we still don't know what we're going to see with him. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I'm a little worried with McMahon because I understand as you get closer to the big leagues, you also, we're going to try you at first base because barring a catastrophic injury, third base is handled. But that being said, Ryan McMahon as a first baseman is not a prospect to me.
Yeah, not if the bat doesn't come around a lot.
I don't think, even when I like him, but I never thought the bat would be one where you say he's a guy you're really comfortable at first base. What was selling point was is he was going to play third base. It's the same thing. Again, sometimes I know I get too focused on positional fits and all that, but it's the same thing I still come back to with Tapia. With Raimel Tapia is, if he's a center fielder, the bat fits better to me, still fits better to me than if he's in a corner, especially if he's in left field. Now, that being said, left field has become the wasteland of Major League Baseball, so maybe Tapia will be fine there.
All he has to do really is be better than, that's not true. David Dahl is going to be the left fielder probably in the big leagues. David Dahl is really, really good, and he's way better than Raimel Tapia. I have to say, Raimel Tapia has been one of the more vexing prospects of the last couple of years, and that I don't understand why some publications or writers are so excited about Raimel Tapia, and I just think it's obvious. My favorite word, he doesn't have impact. Where's the impact? Because he hits for a very high average. But it seems like the sabermetrically inclined love Raimel Tapia, and he doesn't hit for power, and he doesn't steal bases efficiently, and he doesn't draw a million walks. I don't get it. I want someone to explain to me why he's so exciting and thrilling.
I will take that bullet because seeing him in Modesto, he's a guy when he's on the field. It sounds weird, but it's a playmaker thing. It's an electricity thing, and for me, when
absolutely
you see that.
That's why I don't get the analytically inclined liking him.
So to me, and this is my prior to joining BA, I definitely thought that Tapia was, there's always guys in every publication that, might get some high low, and I definitely thought he maybe wasn't getting some of the love he deserved. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say I think he's a future all-star, but to me, just he's a catalyst, a guy you can absolutely throw in center field, stick atop your lineup, make some really good plays. And
would you want to put a guy with a 330 on base at the top of your lineup?
And that's sort of the question.
Because how be a catalyst if he's a 330 on base?
And that's sort of the question if it keeps getting better or not. And I think when you look at he makes a lot of contact, you see athleticism, you see an ability to you mentioned impact. I think it's how you define impact. Is it impact in terms of hitting baseballs over the fence or impact in terms of, he's constantly putting the ball in play and making things happen. I think for me, that's where there's an impact. And maybe it's, you're right, maybe it's not, he's probably not going to lead off here in the major leagues, but.
I actually think that the problem with Tapia, I think he's overrated offensively because he does make a lot of contact. He made more contact this year, but it's not power contact. So I think he's a little overrated on the offense because he doesn't steal bases efficiently. He's never drawn a ton of walks. He's a singles hitter who frankly makes a lot of outs, kind of like Juan Pierre. I actually think where he's underrated is I think he's gotten better defensively. So, JJ, your concern earlier about him being a left fielder, I don't think that's actually what he is anymore. I think he's more of the scouts I talk to and I help with our PCL stuff, but he's gotten better defensively, and he can handle center field more. I also think that in Coors Field, you got to have corner guys who can run.
Right.
So I actually think he's a little overrated offensively, where I do think the contact and putting the ball in play and that he's speedy, I think it's an old school approach where you like him more than you probably should. But I think he's underrated defensively. So I think he actually fits. I like him better now than I did before, which is kind of weird. But I just thought he was overrated before. Now I don't want to say he's underrated. I think he's more properly rated now because he's actually, I think, more of an option for them in center field if they need him, if they were to trade Charlie Blackmon. For me, he's their option in center field. And I think, again, defensively, he might fit in left field for them, whereas David Dahl to me is a profile right fielder. I know they have Cargo, but if they decide to trade Cargo, David Dahl's a profile right fielder who could play center, kind of like an Andy Vance-like.
The guy, one of the position players that I really like, that I do feel is somewhat kind of gets forgotten sometimes, is Tom Murphy, because Tom Murphy is good enough defensively to catch in the big leagues.
See, you like Tony Walters better. They have like
I do love Tony Walters. Walters is like
Rancho Buena Vista's Tony Walters.
Yeah,
they have like the yin and yang of catchers. They have the undersized, draws a lot of walks, gritty gamer guy.
Who can slide to shortstop if you need him for a
second
game?
Base. Yeah, no.
Yeah, let's say second base.
He's played shortstop in the big leagues. He's played it.
That's fine.
But Murphy is the power
brutish catcher. Yes.
Who will? I mean, but again, you put him 400 at bats. How many home runs does he hit?
Oh, especially playing course, 25 easy.
I mean, he's hit 8 home runs and 79 big league at bats already.
He's been. I don't know. It's been impressive.
He had
19 and 303 at bats at Albuquerque last year.
He's what people thought Peter O'Brien could be, but he can actually catch. Now, is he a gold glove catcher? No. Does he go above the Tyler Flowers line?
Yes.
He'll throw out more than two guys. I'm sorry that we keep banging on Chipola's own Tyler Flowers. I love Tyler Flowers' career, but the dude threw out two guys in like 58 attempts in the big leagues last year. So I think Tom Murphy, and I think it's a nice compliment that you have an energy guy like Walters and a big power strong guy in Murphy. I think the Rockies have some potential behind the plate. So the upshot of all this is that the Rockies have this very interesting offseason. I think Ken Rosenthal, I'm going to cite him, I think he said the only three teams spent more money this offseason on their big league roster than the Rockies, but it was on like Mike Dunn and Ian Desmond, and it was a little bit of a weird offseason. But I do feel like the Rockies are ready to take a step forward. Here's their lineup, guys. I mean, it's basically Dahl, Blackman, Cargo in the outfield with Gerardo Parra as a highly priced fourth outfielder, but that's what he is. You probably need that with Dahl's injury track record and Cargo's injury track record. Ian Desmond, DJ LeMahieu, batting champ DJ LeMahieu, Trevor Story, Nolan Arenado, in contention for the best player in the National League.
But by the way, when you say batting champ, it is one of the things that if you play for Colorado,
in the last 22 years.
Yeah, it is basically something where it's like there is a certain amount of birthright of, okay, so who among us is going to win the batting title
exactly.
This year?
I mean, when you get to play 81 games a year at Coors Field and then another 10 at Chase Field in Arizona,
absolutely.
I mean, you get 90 plus games where you can really elevate your batting average.
And then you have Walters and Murphy behind the plate. That's a playoff caliber lineup for me.
I love
David Dahl. And then the rotation, we'll see if Chad Bettis is healthy from his offseason bout with testicular cancer. All signs are pointing to positive. Chad Bettis has been sneaky good the last couple years. Tyler Chatwood, another SoCal guy, has been sneaky decent for them. I think it's hard for him to keep that going. His walk strikeout ratio is never great. Jonathan Gray really stepped forward last year. Club record 16 strikeouts in that one game. I think he's a further rotation guy waiting to happen. Tyler Anderson, hashtag Team Vegas, but also like after a career of injuries was really good in the
And as we talked about it on the Diamondbacks, it's like you spot him in as he's the change of pace kind of guy.
And then you got Jeff Hoffman and Herman Marquez, two highly rated prospects battling for the fifth starter job.
And then below you have Kyle Freeland, you have some other guys. I mean, it's funny.
Eddie Butler, DFA. We used to like that guy.
You know, this is a team that, when I'm looking at a major league team and what I want to see, a top-to-bottom lineup that's dangerous, no automatic outs in there, and starting pitching that has both that frontline proven talent and the depth. And the Rockies have it all. I mean, this, to me, is a team that, frankly, as long as, the injuries don't hit, which you never can predict, I wouldn't be shocked if I could see them finishing in second place in the NOS. I can see them jumping the Giants. I'm not going to predict it when we come out and do our season predictions.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't shock me. I really think that's how good this team is. A lot of it is going to be injury-based. A lot of it's going to be dependent on the starting pitching and how those guys come up, how effective they are, because we all know Coors Field can mess with people's heads.
Yes.
Jeff Hoffman was not great when he came up, gave up a lot of home runs. Marquez will be getting his first shot. Maybe if Sensatella is healthy again, he'll have a shot. But I love Tyler Anderson back to his Oregon days. I remember covering a game, ASU Oregon, having never heard of the kid, and I watch him and I'm go, yeah, this kid's legit.
Yeah, no, he really puts the ball where he wants to put it. I mean, he's a command-oriented left-hander. His stuff's the movement's late. He just was never healthy until last year.
Right, you add John Gray and Tyler Chatwood. You mentioned what's sustainable or not. You look at him, his road numbers, he's actually one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's had a little bit of trouble in Coors.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is a guy who's been a solid, when healthy, a solid pitcher.
And it was Tommy John, and he came back from Tommy John.
Second Tommy John.
Yeah, with 160 innings last year. So that's a really encouraging sign. They don't have as many rotation options, actually, as the Diamondbacks do, but their rotation options, I think, are as good as the Diamondbacks.
To me, well, wait till we get to the Giants. Great. And again, it's not, you know, but when you talk about rotation options, yeah, the Giants, you can put together a plausible backup 10.
Right.
Now,
right,
there are a lot of fifth starters in that, but there's a lot, like, well, pretty much their entire rotation at AAA and AA could be like, yeah, that guy could pitch in the big leagues for you. You know?
The thing is, all those guys are young for the Rockies. That's the one thing. Like, you almost would love to see if there was one, like, quote-unquote proven veteran in the middle of that, but in a way, it's almost better there is. I mean, the oldest guy there
all
is
these
Chad
guys,
Bettis.
All these guys grew up. Nope. I think there's some advantage to it. None of those guys go, you know, if I could just be back in fill in the blank,
right,
where my pitching didn't, you know, get punished on a, you know, like,
right,
all these pitchers basically largely have grown up accepting the fact that that's a 4.5 ERA is
that's
a good year.
Like, their extra guy is basically Jordan Lyles, who's a young veteran, but he's 26.
Well, even, I mean, Chadwick's been in the majors now since 2011, so it's,
right,
he just came up young.
He's
so
27.
He's been there 5-6 years. He's not a total babe.
I mean, that's the way to go. Honestly, in Coors Field, I'm with you.
Again, I like the fact that they've been able to develop some pitching of their own.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't just basically thrown up their hands and said,
yeah,
because which they've done in the past. I mean, this is the thing that they've done here that I think, I mean, when we talked about, when we did the Diamondbacks podcast, we talked about how they have switched courses over and over.
The weird
thing about it is that the Rockies have changed who's at the top of the flow chart.
Yeah, with Jeff Breidich.
They've changed that multiple times, and they've changed some things like, okay, now this year you're gonna be in charge of the minors, and you're gonna be they've switched things up.
And Zach Wilson is a farm director, a little more analytically inclined than say Bob Gebhardt was.
But all that being said, there has been that I feel like there's finally some consistency as far as there was this they finally kind of accepted, we have to figure out a way to develop pitching.
Yeah.
And we can't just say we got to find this certain type who fits in Coors Field. We're going to have a variety, and we're going to figure out which of those guys can do it.
The way that Tracy Rinklesby articulated it in this year's organization overview, and we're happy to have Tracy, Baseball America's founding uncle, as we like to call him, helped Alan Simpson start this magazine. So Tracy's been with us for 35, 36 years. The way he wrote it in the org overview is, you know, the Rockies have decided to stop looking at gimmicks to fix their pitching. They've decided to just try to find better arms. Let's find power arms. Let's find a guy who's been a breaking ball. We're not going to steer everybody away from a curveball because we're at altitude. We're going to find good pitchers and hope that they pitch well. And pitching well in Coors will be measured differently than pitching well elsewhere. But I kind of like the fact that it's a little bit less gimmicky approach. And the other constant in this has been Bill Schmidt in the scouting department. Bill Schmidt has been their scouting director. I think he's the longest tenured scouting director in the game since 2001, since Matt Harrington, we're crying out loud. I think 2002 might have been his first rep. I think he took over either after Harrington, the year after Harrington, was it 2000, so he would have stayed and started in 2001. He's been doing this for them for a long time. DeMont, Danny Montgomery, the best-dressed scout in the game. I mean, if you see a dapper-looking gentleman with shiny cowboy boots, a salt-and-pepper beard, a little salt-and-pepper on the hair, I mean, DeMont, he knows DeMont knows he's a handsome guy. So you don't miss DeMont when DeMont's at the game. And he's just awesome. And I think I've talked to him for 15 years, and he's never given me his phone number. I have to talk to him at games. And DeMont's always like, hey, you know, I can't talk to you anymore. You know, like, I mean, just DeMont's awesome. I love DeMont. Jay Matthews, they've had a couple defections in their scouting department the last couple of years. But the guys like Damon Iannelli and these guys, DeMont and Bill Schmidt, these are the guys at the top of their scouting chain. They've been in that organization. These are like original Rockies. I mean, these guys have been in this organization for a long time. On the scouting side, I have a lot of confidence in the Rockies, knowing what they're looking for. They know what they believe in, and they execute it. And they've been a pretty good scouting and player development organization over the years. It's just hard to win at Coors. I think they've decided to stop being gimmicky on the big league side. I think that's probably a good way to do it.
But let me ask both of y'all. You said you could see them being, you know, this is, you know, and this seems like, the funny thing is I feel like that the Rockies are being talked about by so many people as being the surprise team that
I see them finishing in fourth
right,
place. That's a huge range of outcomes, I think.
Yes.
I personally feel like that the reality is that I think when it's all said and done, they're probably not going to.
I didn't like their off season. I would have liked their team better. Yeah, I like them better than you do, but for me, I would have loved for them to sign Mark Trumbo.
Right, it made no sense to sign Ian Desmond for $70 million when you could have had Mark Trumbo, a true first baseman, for $39 million. But I think that was odd.
The explanation I've gotten from talking to club officials has been they wanted the better athlete, which they think that's what plays at Coors Field for sure, and that's undeniable. He's the better athlete, and the makeup on Ian Desmond for them, and there are consistent reports over the years that this is a winning type ball player, that with the things he does in the clubhouse in Washington and Texas. But they paid a lot.
And Trumbo's also a really good makeup guy. So it's not like he's a bum. He's also a great makeup guy.
But they paid a lot for that with Ian Desmond. Maybe he's also an insurance policy for them at shortstop with Trevor Story.
Shortstop, center field. I mean, the thing about it is he does give you some versatility there on a team that has, as you said, has had some injury issues. I just look at this, though, and again,
still was a surprising move.
It's a surprising move. And I guess, like you said, you could see them finishing second. If they do that, is that second at 86, 88, or is that second at 90, 92?
I was thinking more of the 84 to 86 range. I mean, for me, I think when we do our predictions, I'll predict them for third place. I can see them getting up to second. I can also see if the young pitching doesn't develop and the injuries hit again, they can also win 74 games. I mean, there's a huge range of outcomes here, partially because of their youth and injury history at some of the key spots. David Dahl, Trevor Story, et cetera.
This is their 25th season. They've never won more than 92 games in a year. I mean, never won more than 92 games. So predicting them, to me, their upside is 90 wins. That's the upside of this roster. And a lot has to go into it. But I think 90 wins could be good enough to be a postseason team this year.
Still going to be tough, though, because you do have, I mean, again, you look at it and you say the second team in the Central, the second team in the East, and the Giants, because, again, but the thing they do have, and I don't know if they need to use it this way, but, again, we talk about this farm system. They do have pieces. If they're sitting there in July and they have the nucleus of a 90-win team, but they need a couple pieces, this is a team now that has some pieces to trade. I feel like a little better than they did, you know, a few years ago. I like this farm. I do like the farm system a lot, mainly because of the depth. I mean, there are some guys that I'm not big on who you made the 30, but you look at it overall, and I do feel like that this is a very solid 30.
That second level pitching with guys like Yensi Almonte, Sam Howard, those are really good guys who do have big league arms.
They're pitching depth is interesting. Like David Hill. I really like David Hill in last year's draft. I'll tell you, like, my personal cheese ball in this system as a fast mover is Parker French.
Yep.
Parker French is Matt Belisle 2.0. I think he's going to have a long career as a sinker balling middle reliever. That's not a super high ceiling, but Matt Belisle is going to have a pension. He's been in the big leagues forever. Parker French is going to be in the big leagues forever. Here's a little two-seamer. Hit this one into the ground. Here comes another one.
Valley ERA champ.
I like Parker French. He's also a sneaky future back in the rotation guy if his command continues to be this. I think he's more of a control over command guy, but you know, he was a really competitive pitch. He competes. That's what I like about Parker French. He has no fear. He's scared.
We had a Twitter question about Ben Bowden. We talk about Vandy boys. So what do you think about Ben Bowden and kind of how he fits in all this?
I think he's the fast mover. I think he's like, you know, a much bigger version of, like, we talked about Zach Curtis in the last podcast. Zach Curtis and Sam Moll are two birds of a feather, these little lefties. Ben Bowden's a power, big left-hander, but a guy's going to move, I think, very quickly through the minor leagues. Spins a breaking ball up to 95 from the left side in shorter bursts. Was really good in the Cape. He checked all those boxes that a lot of teams like. I like Ben Bowden, but I think he's more of a bullpen option, which is, you know, you could use that. Internally, to me, French and Bowden and maybe Almonte are three arms who could help their big league bullpen potentially this year.
Speaking of a guy as a bullpen option long term, I know that they're going to try to make Robert Tyler a starter. I understand that.
But he's a future reliever.
If Robert Tyler ends up as a starter, that is a great development story because there's a lot that has to go right for him to start. Yes. But at the same time, if you said, we put him in the pen, he moved pretty quick. I could see that, too.
You put him in the pen, he's going to blow 99 with a good changeup. And again, fastball changeup righty, I love that profile in the bullpen. Starting pitching, not so much. But in the bullpen, I really like that option.
So it's interesting because, again, all these guys we're talking about here are like the third level pitching prospects in the Rockies organization.
Right.
They got that top level.
That's why I like their system.
Yeah, it's something where I like the Major League product. I like the system in place. I mean, you know, JJ, again, you asked how many wins will be this year. I think, you know, everything goes right, it's 84 to 86. Now, next year, the year after, then I start, you know, again, it's going to depend on some injuries and
right,
smart
but they...
trades, but I do see the roots here, John, for them to eventually best that 92-win best at Coors
Field. It's a young big league roster. I mean, and I don't
and
think
there's young pitching on the way.
Right, and I don't think you can underestimate, they actually have a dude. There's going to be a month during this season where Nolan Arenado is going to win them games on his own. That guy is so stinking good and so much fun to watch.
And
I love watching Nolan Arenado.
I just love watching him play defense. It's beautiful.
All of it.
And then, oh, by the way, he's one of the best hitters in baseball, too. It's crazy.
But he's probably the best hitter who walks the least in the big leagues by a wide margin. I mean, like, he's the best example of you don't have to walk a lot to be a great hitter. It's harder. It makes his degree of difficulty much harder. But he keeps doing it year after year, which gives me a lot of confidence.
The other guy I like, again, is a guy's in the teens, is Garrett Hampson. Not because I think Garrett Hampson's going to be incredible or anything like that.
I'm glad you mentioned him.
But the reality of it is that this was a bad shortstop draft. Last year was a bad college shortstop draft. That being said, there are going to be some college shortstops who come out of it who end up being big leaguers. And Garrett Hampson is as plausible to do that as basically anyone.
I agree. They're second level... middle of the diamond guys. I want to make sure I ask about some Cal League guys here. But they're middle of the diamond guys. So they have, we mentioned their first level guys, Rogers and Murphy, a shortstop and a catcher. Their second level middle of the diamond guys, and we mentioned Tapia as a potential short center fielder, are Dom Nunez, Garrett Hampson, Forrest Wall. You can talk a little bit about Hampson if you want. So I'm sure you saw him on the Long Beach State, Team Reno, and don't ever ask John Savage about Garrett Hampson. We'll just throw that out there right now.
The thing I'll say about Garrett Hampson is, was the last four Long Beach State shortstops have all been big leaguers?
It's a tradition unlike any other.
Tulo, Duffy, who are we forgetting?
We're forgetting Bobby Crosby.
Right, I mean...
Crosby, Tulo, Longo, because Longo was a shortstop when Tulo was hurt. Also fun to say Tulo and Longo.
Espinoza, Duffy,
and then this guy,
yeah,
Garrett Hampson.
Yeah, it's like the last five, so just by that pedigree alone.
Hashtag legacy. I mean, that's really...
It's impressive.
And Garrett Hampson had a great debut. Not a good debut. This is a guy who, very controlled running game at Long Beach State. He got in the Pro Bowl and they're like, hey, run. Run when you can. Because the Big West, you've seen it. The number one reason Big West games took so long is that when a guy gets on base, it's like, okay, here comes the catcher. We're not Facebook Live, but he's going through a billion signals. The pitcher's going to pick the first 20 times. That doesn't happen in the Northwest League. Northwest League, you get on first base, I got to work on my fastball. You're just going. The pitcher's just going. The catcher ain't got a million signals. My favorite story of this all time is Sean Martin, Spider, coming out of the Cal State Fullerton staff. I think 2003 was his last year in college baseball. He goes the next year to the Giants low class A team, and Roberto Kelly's going through all their, they're just going through in and out. And it's like, yeah, it's a basic in and out. And the season's getting ready to start. And Sean Murphy goes up to him afterwards and goes, hey, Skip, do we have any bunt defenses? And he's like, bunt defense? It's the South Atlantic League. He's like, can I put in a bunt defense with our pitchers? And can I do that in and out tomorrow? So, whatever, you know, go ahead. So Sean Murphy, just because he went to Fullerton, and they probably had 40 bunt defenses, puts in a bunt defense for the low class A Augusta Green Jackets. That nothing else tells you the difference between the Big West and minor league ball more than that.
When he said,
felt naked without a bunt defense.
Let's be honest. When he said, can I put in a bunt defense?
Oh, yeah. He probably
he's
had
like,
10 on his
it's like He's like, he's sitting there going, okay, I can't teach all 10 we have. Let me see. I got to boil it down to like the two best ones.
Yeah. He's like Frank the Tank in old school, where he's like, you know, I don't know if we're going to have time. He's got to go to Bed Bath & Beyond. He's got to put in a bunt defense. I'm not sure we'll have time. You know, that's how these Big West players. So freed up a little bit. In pro ball, a little less structure, 36 steals and 40 attempts for Garrett Hampson. And the thing is, in the Big West, they do teach you how to play baseball.
Yeah.
Troy Buckley's got a pro ball by background, head coach of Long Beach State. And that legacy, Troy Buckley's part of building that with Mike Weathers and, of course, Snowman. Well, so you know how to play the game when you come out of Long Beach State and show.
That's part of why, you know, and I'm probably biased here, you know, people who may not be as familiar with college baseball ask me, hey, is there like a, you know, an old school BCS? And I say, well, you know, it's Pac-12, Big 12, you know, ACC, SEC. For me, I consider the Big West one of the big five cards just because of the championship history, the player quality. I mean,
The depth of that league is undersold around college baseball.
As I tried to tell you guys last year. Well,
the thing is, in recent years, it had been bad. But now 3 years in a row, three different Big West teams have gone to the College World Series with the Gauchos, the Titans, and of course,
the Anteaters, Zot. But going, making it back to Hampson, I mean, it's a great program. It's a great pedigree. You know, again, the guys who, you know, hey, they'll get to the majors because they've got X, Y, and Z from, you know, a skill set, a pedigree, a knowledge of how to play the game. Now, what that impact will be, we'll see. But again, a lot of teams don't have shortstop prospects who will eventually be in the majors. The Rockies have two, probably a third in there somewhere.
Yeah, no, it's a good system. Let's wrap up with some of their Cal League guys. Dom Nunez, converted catcher. Is he an Elk Grove guy too?
Yeah, he's an Elk Grove guy. He missed some time with
I always forget Dom Nunez in my Elk Grove rant.
Sorry, Dom.
Do you know, sorry to interrupt real quick, but so we got to do Elk Grove because I don't think there's
Derek
anyone.
Derek Hill, Dom Nunez, Rowdy Tellez, Nick Madrigal's not in the book, Dylan Carlson, and JD Davis. Yeah. That's your Elk Grove.
I was going to say, because we have not talked about the 2013 prep class from Tennessee
in
at least two podcasts. So I have to at least mention it, because if otherwise, I think we have shot collars that go off if we don't mention it.
I think that's right.
Sorry, well, I apologize for interrupting.
It's funny you mention that, because when I was at the Riverside Press Enterprise, one of my coverage teams was Temecula Valley. They won the Boris Classic South Division, and they went and played Elk Grove Classic State game. And at the time, we knew about Derek Hill, but as time's gone on, it's like, wow, that was a really good team.
And that's six dudes I just mentioned who are all either in top 30s or, in Madrigal's case, preseason All-American. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No question. But going back, I mean, you know, Nunez, to be completely honest, did not impress a lot in the Cal League this year. A lot of it has Dom Nunez, Forrest Wall. Some of these guys
were his name's Forrest Wall. I really want to talk about Forrest Wall.
Okay. A lot of these guys did not do much in the Cal League to impress guys. Which, it's interesting, as I was covering the Cal League for a few years, I just kept noticing every year, like, you could almost see it happening. Modesto always had an arm or two. That was, you know, first it was Eddie Butler, who also didn't work out, and Chad Bettis. And then coming through, you saw John Gray come through. You saw Tyler Anderson come through. And then this past year, you saw Ryan Castellani come through, who...
And Parker French.
Parker French, who's not... I wouldn't put it at the same level, but...
Correct.
The Rockies have been... There's always been a really good starting arm or two at Modesto every year for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, and we're seeing that come to fruition now. The position players, really, strangely enough, I mean, Trevor Story obviously has worked out. Arenado was there, but in terms of, like, recent 3, 4, 5 years, position players outside of Corey Dickerson, there hasn't been a real legit stud. So I think
I like Corey Dickerson.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Dahl was there for a very brief time, so he counts. But I mean, it's something where I think when you look at the Modesto teams of recent years, it's actually been the pitching that's been the strong suit that's come through the system.
And that was the case this year with Castellani, who was outstanding there, number one prospect in the league, 20 years old, 168 innings. The Rockies are not afraid to work their pitchers.
Well, it's weird, because with him, they were. I mean, they were limiting him to, you know, three-inning outings. I think his career high before us was something very low. They turned him loose this year, and what you loved was this was a guy who, late into the season, was getting through lineups a third time, three different pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy that I think, you know...
He was outstanding the last month. I mean, he had one bad start in September, but in August, he was balled out, strong as ever.
You know,
35 innings, 5 walks, he balled out.
The size, the stuff, the makeup, I mean, the age. I mean, he's the young... It wasn't just like, oh, he had a beard in Cali. He was the youngest pitcher in the league on opening day.
Yeah.
No, and he dominated.
He had a really nice season, and he's number six in the system. The guy who did not have a good season, JJ, was Forrest Wall. And I'll tell you, I'm teeing you up here, because I know where this is going. You don't like it, go right back.
We've had this conversation.
We've had this conversation off air. But Forrest Wall, like, I have to go... When I'm editing Rocky's copy... I had to go back and read JJ what we wrote about Forrest Wall summer of 2013 and spring of 2014 out of high school. And same thing to you. I had to do the same thing to you to remind you this was once a guy who scouts were just convicted he was going to hit. And he has not hit as a pro. Do we know why?
Pro ball is hard. And the thing about it is like, really, I wish I had a better answer for this, but really what it comes down to is that not only is pro ball hard, but pro ball shows you who you are pretty quickly, I really do believe.
Yeah.
And there was a reason Forrest Wall, like when I did the salary list, and it was like, where's Forrest Wall? Well, I didn't talk to guys who saw him, because the problem for Forrest Wall is that if we were talking about a shortstop, we'd be talking about something different.
Right.
Because when you say he hadn't hit, really what it comes down to is and again, he went, you know, Asheville and Modesto, both nice places. This is not, there's no Death Valleys here where you say, you know, where balls go to die or anything like that. But he didn't, he wasn't terrible in 2015 in the South Atlantic League. But
he wasn't great.
But he wasn't great. And when you are a guy, the bat is what it is for Forrest Wall.
That's right.
As a second baseman, the bat, you say, well, this guy should be a good hitter. I mean, that's there's legitimate questions about defensively where he ends up.
He needs to get to work on his J-bands because he cannot throw. He's had, I believe, his two shoulder surgeries, and the arm strength just hasn't bounced back. I mean, how wet noodly was his arm in person?
So, it's funny. I actually, just by virtue of the schedule, I didn't get to see him in person this year. So, it was a lot more. I really had to rely on talking to scouts. And what they all said was, it's funny, no one even actually brought the arm as much as they did the glove itself, which is supposed to be fine, but it wasn't. I mean, they talk about booting routine grounders, not having proper footwork, you know, charging when he should stay back, staying back when he should charge. I mean, just, it was a mess.
It was like feel for the game defensively was not there.
So it's like, you know, it's funny. My favorite scout comment about him, you know, when I talk to all these guys, you know, we run through 75 to 100 guys we talk about, and not a single person brought his name up, which is always a red flag to me. Coach, managers, players, and it was, when I asked about him, I got a few, I don't remember him, which is also a red flag.
It's a red flag.
And the few that did, so let me look through my notes, and I mean, my favorite quote was, can't hit, can't feel, can't throw, can run a little bit.
That's not what you want for a $2 million guy.
So, you know, and that's from a pro scout who, you know, had no prior knowledge of him, just what they're seeing who he is now.
Right.
And that's concerning.
We talk about, we do talk about this on a regular basis, the difference of, like, when guys go from, okay, they've been seen by amateur scouts to being seen by pro scouts.
Yeah.
Forrest Wall is a guy when pro scouts see him, because they're not looking at it and saying, man, I love that bat.
They come in there and they say, why'd this guy get $2 million?
Right. They come in and they say, okay, what I'm looking at is a guy, and it's very straightforward. Do I see this guy as a prospect? If I do I see him as a future big league regular? Do I see him as an impact player? Do I see him as a backup? Where does his role? And the problem with Forrest Wall, you just summed up, is he's going to have to hit a lot better to have a role, because if he doesn't play second base, which is still a question, he moves to the outfield. And if he moves to the outfield, he does run, but it's probably, I mean, there's as many guys who think he ends up in left as they do in center. It's definitely not going to be right. And then again, you're asking, you got to see more pop there. And he does run, but the speed doesn't really make an impact in games. He's not a particularly
22 for 33 stealing bases. Right, it's anti-Garrett Hampson.
Right, it helps. It's like it's a wash from that standpoint.
Because even if you're going to be a middle infield speed defense backup, you have to play defense better. So
I've never thought he was a second baseman. I guess I always thought, to me, just doing draft stuff on him in 2014, I always thought this guy sounds like Johnny Damon. I mean, like 20 arm or Ben Revere. That's what he sounded like to me. The guy's at the hit, be a leadoff guy, and you get to that, hide him in left field. And maybe, like, Ben Revere was throwing changeups his whole career, so he went from having a 30 arm to a 40 arm once he realized, oh, I got to grip the ball like this, really? You know, but Johnny Damon always had a below the 20-80 scale arm. I mean, the worst arm in the big leagues. To be Johnny Damon, he had to have enough feel for playing center field that he could do that because he had no arm. And he had to have the kind of offense that he had, where he was a little erratic player but had power and made a lot of contact and had 2,500 hits. I mean, that's a lofty player to be. So Forrest Wall is pretty far from being Johnny Damon. That's what I thought his best case scenario was, and JJ, he's just not trending that way.
Donnie Deweese versus Forrest Wall. Two very similar.
They're the same cat.
Who would you prefer?
I would still prefer Forrest Wall, because the reports on Forrest Wall out of high school were just so good. Active setup for rhythm, rhythm hitter with understanding of the strike zone, solid actions on defense, which he hasn't showed as a pro, room to get stronger, high school version of Dustin Ackley, not work it out yet. Plus hit.
That ended up being an accurate prediction.
Plus run, plus hit, high energy player. It's just got to play. And I think again, a kid from Florida, you thought there was gonna be more polish. I don't think he's as polished as the Rockies thought he. That has not been borne out in pro ball. And I think the main thing, like you said, is pro ball's hard. He's running into some adversity here that's not injury related. It's performance related. How does he bounce back? I think it's a huge year for him developmentally. I think he's got to go back to the Cal League and show the Rockies and the baseball industry that he can hit and that there's some impact in the back, because he's got to be a bat first player.
Especially now that they're going to Lancaster from Modesto. You know, Modesto, there's high gaps, so you can hit some doubles. There's definitely some things you can do, but it's not really an offensive, you know, launching pad by any means.
Right.
Lancaster is, that's a place you can go get some confidence, you know, show, you know, start to believe in yourself a little more. And I would agree. I mean, I think you probably do have to play him back there.
It also
would test him in the outfield, because the high winds really wreak havoc.
Yes.
You learn how to play a really good outfield in Lancaster.
It'd be a good place to learn to play outfield. Here's another Florida Diamond Club report from our own @Clint_BA. Hashtag alumnus. 6.5 in the 60. 415, 402 to first. Line drives everywhere. Power potential. Almost painful watching him throw. They were rainbows and he winced at times. That's how bad the arm was. He 20'd it. But has to be one of the best high school hitters in the country. Love the bat. And you go through our draft coverage that year, and he was a split camp guy. But there were 10 to 12 teams that were all in on Forrest Wall. And then there were others that just knew $2 million, I'm out, because of the arm. And I think the teams that have been, the Rockies right now are, you know, waiting to see, I think. And their minds, they haven't seen the right Forrest Wall yet. And I think you have to hope for his sake, and the Rockies, they haven't. But if this is the real Forrest Wall, he's not a guy. This is the bottom line. This was a big-time hitter out of the 2014 draft, and so far he hasn't lived up to it.
The funny thing is he was comped to Dustin Ackley there. And there are...
Does he drift like Dustin Ackley did?
Like, I mean, there comes back to, it's like, that is kind of... He could be on the same path, which is that Dustin Ackley is a better version of this, but Dustin Ackley was thought by many to be as safe a hitter as there had been in the draft.
I can't imagine why. He hit 412 in 3 years.
Right.
With power.
Right. And the reality... But the reality of it is that when you look at when you talk about, like, why does it happen? I mean, it's tough to sometimes answer that question. But that's Dustin Ackley's pro career. You know, that 412 was never there.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it wasn't going to be
241 with a 304 on base in 2,100 big league at bats, and he's 29 years old. He's established.
The bat did not translate from amateur ball to pro ball.
Now, I like the Angels taking a flyer on him and seeing if he could help them this offseason.
But they're acquiring him, and he's not their.
He's a distressed asset.
Right. He's not option A. He's barely option B.
Although you've seen some left fielders they've put out in recent years. You never know.
Right.
They acquired Cam Maven this year, but we'll see. I will say, you know, Dustin Ackley obviously is a guy everyone loves to you know, get down. I mean, he's still in the big leagues going on his seventh year.
Right.
You know,
JJ's saying, you know, Dustin Ackley's the better version. Like, first of all, has something to get to Dustin Ackley.
Right.
But Dustin Ackley, the thing is, though, is
he's
that...
He got $6 million out of the draft.
No question he hasn't lived up to what he's supposed to be, but I'm saying, at least he's, you know...
Makes me sad. I love Dusty.
At least he's a big leaguer who's having a career, which, at this point, Forrest Wall is going to have to take significant steps to even get to that.
Dustin Ackley, I think, is the first player I ever went up to at the end of his college career and thanked him for being so awesome. He was so much fun to watch for 3 years, to see a dude who could run and could hit in college baseball. See, and the second player was Trey Turner.
But let me take a different part of that, which is that, again, with Ackley, the thing that Ackley faced coming out of it was, where is he going to play?
Right.
I wonder with Forrest Wall, when you talk about offensively, as we said, he's had significant arm. That does weigh on you a little bit.
Yeah.
When you have a part of your game that is a significant challenge, I do wonder if he's a guy who eventually, you know, if you move him to the outfield and you take away some of the defensive responsibility, does that free him up some at the plate? That was also the hope with Dustin Ackley.
We saw it with Franchi Cordero a little bit with the Padres. He was a shortstop, made 126 errors in 158 games. I mean, we're talking, there are stories of balls landing four rows up. They moved to the outfield, said forget about it, and voila, relaxed, everything eased up, it was a natural fit, so you could see. But I think the good thing from the Rockies' big picture perspective is, if Forrest Wall does turn around, great, awesome. They don't need him to. He's not their number one, number two guy. They're kind of, they're
That's
set
a great point.
In the middle infield. You know, even if it's just, hey, let's just hang on to LeMahieu and Story, and then you have Rogers behind them.
They're not counting on Forrest Wall.
You're right. So it's something where, hey, if he works out, great, but he's not going to make or break this system or the Rockies' future.
That's a great point, a great way to end it, because it is a good system. And I think we all like what the Rockies have done farm system-wise. And there's depth. There's other guys we didn't even talk about that we like. So I like Antonio Senzatella. I like Jordan Patterson. I like Jordan Patterson. Like John Mabry, who can run. You know, I think he's a really good big league reserve. You know, so they have some interesting pieces. I think we think the Rockies are going to be all right. But how they are this year, going to be interesting. I just think it's stunning. I mean, this is their 25th year. They've never won more than 92 games. I think playing at altitude is very difficult. So, Kyle, thanks for coming in. Thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America podcast. A reminder that all of our podcasts and Facebook Live broadcasts are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. For JJ and Kyle, I'm John Manuel. And for Baseballism, we'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.